Welcome back, my fellow clackers. Your West Coast host here, Bob Marshall, with another episode of Austin Typewriter Inc. This is very excited. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, if you haven't read about it or seen about it, December 4th, that's less than a week away, December 4th in the downtown LA Art District, we're going to be having the Very Merry Winter Market. This is terribly exciting because it's free to attend and free parking. Free parking in downtown LA. Downtown LA Art District, right off the freeway, 441 Seton Street, Los Angeles. This event is hosted in a large space by our friends at Typewriter Connection. Needless to say, this is going to be the exciting thing for me of the year because I get to unveil my new typewriter shop. My typewriter shop is being unveiled at someone else's location. How does that work? Because it has wheels. The Typewriter Muse we have here at Typewriter Muse, we have decided to just go bold and invest everything in a typewriter emporium on wheels. There's going to be repair, there's going to be showroom, and it's all going to be mobile. So I've had a lot of fun rebuilding this old 1967 Ideal trailer. It's got a ton of style. A lot of the built-ins had to come out, remodeling, renovation. You can find it on my Instagram, Typewriter Muse. I've also put some ton of cool little videos that I've learned to figure out on TikTok. So that's been a ton of fun. Again, Typewriter Muse. We're going to be completely unveiling it December 4th, this Saturday. The event is from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m., so noon to 6 p.m. We're going to be there, downtown LA Art District. Typewriter Connection is the name of the typewriter shop. Putting it all on. It's in a large place. We're going to have, I think, almost 30 vendors there. Everything from gift wrapping, the typewriter haiku people will be there. Some pen and ink people will be there. I know there's going to be a food truck, and I think there's going to be a coffee truck as well. And you know me, I'm all about the coffee. So very excited to announce this December 4th, downtown LA Art District. Hope to see you there and stop and say hi if you can make it, because I'm excited to show you all the work we've done in our new Typewriter Emporium on wheels. Let's get to the show.
Welcome to the Austin Typewriter Inc. podcast. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to listen to our little gab fest. We're just a group of folks who enjoy the heck out of typewriters and welcome you to our table. Sit back and enjoy the show, and away we go.
David says it best, as always. Your host here from the West Coast, one Mr. Bob Marshall with Typewriter Muse. Very excited today to bring you some young talent we're blessed to have in this, the typosphere. Somewhere around Chicago, in the state of Illinois, in these United States of America, is a young man who very much enjoys playing with typewriters. So isn't it great that we get to have a conversation with him today? Lucas Duell, here today on Austin Typewriters, Inc. Lucas, how the heck are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, you're very kind. I know we've been going back and forth for a while. We've been very excited here at Austin Typewriters, Inc. to get your young talent on the show.
I've been very excited to be here. I've been a longtime admirer of the podcast, and I appreciate what you guys are doing.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. If anyone is listening, I'll tell the quick story of how I got put into it as Austin Typewriters, Inc. host on the West Coast. I do another podcast called American Roadrunner, and I had been on Austin Typewriters, Inc. when I was in Austin last time, which was probably 2.5 years ago now, maybe almost three. But David was very kind in that, and then he'd call me for audio advice, or I'd call him for audio advice. And then I said, well, I like what you're doing. How do I get involved? And he said, well, we could use a West Coast host. So here I am getting to enjoy all the goodness that is Austin Typewriters, Inc. But you happen to be in some place cool in Illinois called Downers Grove?
Yes, I'm the Midwestern guy here.
Okay. And I suspect once upon a time you thought, well, let me play guitar with my hands and then let me play a typewriter with my feet. And then you were probably throwing cards with your hair. And is that how you got into typewriters? Or?
Yeah, that is me. That is exactly me.
That's what I thought. Yeah, what got you into typewriters?
Really being kind of clumsy got me into typewriters. I've always been really intrigued by mechanical devices and fixing things. I first really got into clocks. I loved watching the movements of old clocks. And I was also a reader and a writer. So I was bumming around in some antique store locally about 8 years ago. I think this was around 2013, 2014. And I came across this Royal 10 sitting in the corner there, and I almost tripped on it. And, you know, when you do that, it really brings your focus into what it is that you tripped on. And I thought it was just, you know, a really cool thing. So it was about Christmas time, and my mom was asking me what, you know, I might want for Christmas. And I thought back to that typewriter that I saw in that shop, and I decided, hey, I wouldn't mind owning one of those. And this was kind of before typewriters really took off into something that was insanely popular. So we got a good price on it, and it was really nice. You know, it worked when I got it. It wasn't the worst machine that I've ever seen, and it really helped jumpstart this whole typewriter fixing thing. I'm more mechanically minded, so I thought that it would probably be something I could tackle, and it ended up taking me 2 years to fix this thing.
Wow. Good for you. Good for you keeping at it. So you were, how old were you when this happened?
I was 13, so eighth grade, just going into my freshman year of high school.
That's super cool. I don't know of many eighth graders that would be cool enough to be into clocks and then discover typewriters. So 2 years ripping.
I've always been a lover of the antiques, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, good for you. And you tend to play a little bit of music as well, so it's kind of built into
you. Funny you should mention that. Yes, I do, but it's not really something that I advertise. But yeah, I do. I dabble in the guitar a little bit. I play a little bit of piano.
Okay, this has been an ongoing theme, I know, for a lot of us who wrench, enjoy, write on typewriters. A lot of us play music or started with music or, in my case, have a degree in music that we really don't use. So I
really,
think
that's interesting. I've never heard that before.
Any of the other super cool typewriter weirdos that I like to call my friends. Yeah, we all seem to be into music, but good on you. So what do you get to do these days? You've been at it a few years. How did it come about for you to repair typewriters for the general public?
It started off very, very small and very, very slow. My school was kind of small, so when word got around that I was interested in typewriters and that I knew how to fix them after the success of my first one, people started coming to me and asking me if I could give them little tips and stuff. I remember fixing this one 1950 Smith Corona Silent 5, and this was probably 2016. I had fixed two of my own typewriters, the Model 10, and I'd purchased a Royal Model P, which was at the time probably the one machine that I thought was the nicest of them all. And a friend of mine came up with this little Smith Corona, and some of the keys wouldn't strike. So I took it apart at my school cafeteria and kind of fiddled with the linkages and figured out how they popped back into place. And he was like, wow, you're a wizard. And I was like, you know, hey, I am a wizard. You know, I pat myself on the back there a little bit of an ego boost. And later that year, I think closer towards the end of the semester, somebody else came up to me with a Remington QuietWriter. And that's what I often refer to as my first actual, you know, client project. I fixed that thing. It wasn't, you know, the best machine, but it typed really well. And that's kind of what made me think that this could be something that I could be good at, and that I could spin into something a little bigger. It was probably a couple of years after that that I actually got one of my first major clients. He was a local guy over in Downers. His name was Richard Molman. I'm sure everybody knows him. And by the time that I got to working with him, I had only touched two or three other machines. One of them was an Erica 5, and the other was like a Underwood 3 Bank. So he comes over with a truckload of machines, about 12 or 13 of them, and is like, hey, I need you to fix these up. And I knew nothing about pricing, nothing about running a business. All I saw was typewriters. And I was like, hey, I would like to type on those. But in order to do that, they need to work. So I worked with Richard for about a year. And we had our ups and downs, and I learned a lot about what it means to run a business. It wasn't just about fixing the typewriters. Anybody could fix a typewriter. And, you know, I say that rather loosely, but it's true. Anybody could. But, you know, the whole business aspect of that was the thing that I had to learn the most. That was the toughest part of the whole trial. And once I started to understand that a little bit better, the work just started flooding in. And within the space of about a year, I had gone from, you know, 10 machines a month to like 50.
Wow, that's a big number. Good for you.
I've toned it down more, you know. You can't keep that many machines on a workbench. It's just, it's a hazardous work environment.
Well, it depends on the size of your workbench. From the pictures I've seen, you've got quite the layout there. You're working in your garage or a subroom of your garage? Or
I'm working in a room in the basement. I have old doors that I've laid down on the sides, and that's what I work on. And I have a little space on a shelf in the garage where I just do a lot of the real dirty stuff, like the grinding and the air compressor, and a lot of the work with any chemicals, because ventilation is kind of an issue. That was another thing that I had to learn along the way, was how to do this in a safe manner. So I do stuff on the driveway and in the garage.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think from the pictures I've seen, though, it's pretty laid out, except for your chair. I don't know what's going on with your chair, Matt. You need a better chair. I think I've said it a few times, maybe a nice milk crate or something would be a step up. What?
Yeah, I have two identical yellow folding chairs. And, you know, there's a funny story. When I was really, really little, like maybe 6, 7, my brother was taking drum lessons at the time, and my mom would drop me off at my grandma's apartment to stay there. And, you know, she would give me Legos and replay Lincoln Logs every time and watch like the Goofy movie on VHS. And she had a little balcony at her apartment, and we'd sit out there sometimes and have tea. And she had this tiny little yellow lawn chair that she would let me sit in, and she had a bigger one for herself. So she always told me that yellow was a happy color. It was her favorite color. And I just kind of got, you know, attached to that one chair, but we ended up throwing it out after she passed away. And I have these two yellow folding chairs in my workshop that I just use daily now. One for the basement, one for the garage. And, you know, I'm hesitant to get rid of them.
That is the second best story I've ever heard about a chair, my friend. Holy heck, that makes so much sense. I'm never teasing you about your chairs again. I think a lot of it.
I appreciate it. I have been debating switching it out to a stool, though, because they're folding chairs. They don't have wheels. They're not really mobile.
Right.
So I ended up scooting across the floor, you know, leaving big black marks on the floor. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can
not the
get
best thing.
Yeah, and you can get a nice stool covered in a yellow naga hide or something, right? So.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I got to pick on you for something, because everything else looks absolutely immaculate in your workspace. So good for you.
I stage my photos so it looks like I know what I'm doing.
Nice.
But in reality, I am probably the most disorganized person you're ever going to meet.
I don't know. You and I haven't really gotten a chance to meet yet. So I'm pretty darn disorganized myself. I completely understand. Well, I think that comes for me. I know it has to do with having a near photographic memory. I remember where everything is. So stuff doesn't have to be organized. But what's your excuse?
Oh, that's good for you. My excuse is that I don't tell people how bad it is. My biggest frustration is spending 2 or 3 hours looking for a screwdriver that I just put down and have no idea where it is.
But you always find it, right? So.
Yeah, and I feel like a crazy person afterwards.
Yeah.
A little bit frustrating.
Well, it's only going to get worse when you get older. You're still young yourself, but you're busy educating yourself these days as well.
Yes. I am currently taking college classes, so.
Okay, and you're taking them locally?
Yes, at the local community college. And it's not the biggest time commitment, but it does make it difficult sometimes to get to everything that I need to. And the disorganization thing does play into that.
Sure. Well, let's hear about the normal day. I think a lot of people would be excited. If you're playing with school on the side, how is it when you wake up and start hitting the typers?
I think that a normal day in the life of my workflow is probably the least interesting thing that I could tell anyone. You know, I wake up at like 11 o'clock, you know, because I'm up late at night. And I have a morning routine that I go through, and I don't really get to the typewriter work until late afternoon or the evening, and it's not even every day. But when I go to set down to clean up a typewriter, I have a very specific set of steps that I like to go through to familiarize myself with the machine and kind of get a game plan going on what I want to do. I always assess it, make sure I know exactly what needs to be fixed. So if I break something extra, I know that's my fault. And I'll strip down the body panels and get the machine down to the frame as much as I can before taking it up into the garage. And that's where I do all of the cleaning work over the course of a couple of days, picking out the type slugs, scrubbing everything down. I've been using a Dremel lately. It was a new tool that I acquired maybe last summer. And it really speeds up the process because before I was hand polishing everything and it took forever. But yeah. Getting in some newer tools really helps speed things along. Picked up an air compressor this year as well, and that's been a big help as well. So most of my time with the machine is spent on the cleaning aspect, which really isn't my favorite, but it is somewhat important, you know?
Well, I agree, and it's not all of them you need to completely disassemble to clean. Sometimes it's a wet clean, sometimes it's a dry clean, but you have the capability to do it all.
Yeah, I don't really skimp on some of the certain steps. You know, there's a certain quality that I strive for. I strive for an industry standard. I have never, ever let a machine go that I have not completely stripped the body panels off of.
Sure, sure.
They have to all be done to a certain point for me to feel like, hey, this is acceptable. If I can't type with it on my bed, then it's probably not clean enough.
Yeah, good point.
I think I need my typewriter serviced.
We can do that.
Okay, because I'm marginally sure it's dead. Can you resurrect it?
Yep, pretty sure.
You know what? Maybe I just need a totally different machine.
Well, we can definitely do that.
I don't even know where to buy all the stuff that goes with it.
Accessories? Yeah, we can do that.
This is fantastic.
Find us online, typewritermuse.com. On Instagram and Facebook, at Typewriter Muse. And check out our YouTube channel at, you guessed it, Typewriter Muse.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome. Well, let's talk about your favorite part about typewriters. If anyone has been clever enough to follow you on the social medias, the answer is you're one heck of a typewriter. You really know how to make that machine move.
Yes, I would say typing is what motivates me to actually get the machine done. I'm a very tactile person. I love the feedback of something that I can feel. And typewriters really give that to me. And pretty much that's why I surround myself with old technology, is because there's no digital interface to any of this stuff. You put your hands on it and you do something and you know that you're doing something. And that's something that I've always really appreciated, you know, and it helps me feel a little bit grounded to things. So I'm always looking forward to actually typing on a typewriter. And after having used so many machines, I've gotten comfortable with the technique enough to advance my speed.
I agree. It's pretty awesome to see. I mean, I think compared to anybody I meet or most people I meet, you know, when I can do 40, 50 words a minute on a typewriter, that's pretty good. But you're going a bit faster, so it's very impressive to watch.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Something about the sound of a machine going at its paces like that. It's very satisfying.
Well, and the fact that it does that because of you. Somebody else built it, but the machine needed resurrection, and that was you. That was your fault. It's your reason.
Yes, it was my fault. I hear that a lot.
That's right. It's your fault the machine works so well.
Yeah, so thank you. Yeah, I do enjoy from time to time knowing that I've had my hands in pieces of history. You know, sometimes I'm laying in bed trying to fall asleep and I just start thinking about how incredible it is that I've had the opportunities that I have touching some of these machines that I never would have known existed just a handful of years ago.
I have to admit, I think my favorite was that Williams that you resurrected, putting the paper in and then watching the machine fly.
Yeah, the Williams has probably got to be one of my all-time favorite typewriter designs. It didn't really stand up to the test of time very well, but I just think it's incredibly unique and just a very beautiful machine. And when I first got the opportunity to buy one, I paid way more than I probably should have at the time.
I think we've all done that. So you're in good company.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, I still have the machine. It's one of those ones that I'm just never going to sell. Cool. And maybe it's not the prettiest, but it works. And that's what I've always prioritized. I don't actually give my personal typewriters a full, complete service. I just get them to where they're typing really, really well and I can use them. Normally, when people bring a machine in for me, they want it all spiffed up and cleaned and polished. And I do a little bit of that on my own machines, but I'm primarily focused on the mechanical aspect of it and getting it to a point where I can actually use it for my own enjoyment.
That's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I've got a few machines I'm purposely leaving out, leaving dirty, just to see at what point and what year of my use. When do the ribbons dry out? When does a segment actually
come up?
Ooh,
that is a good question.
Yeah.
I've had ribbons on my machines personally for 4 or 5 years, but I've also had sealed ribbons and ribbon tins that are 70 years old that work just fine.
Right.
I think it's more of a storage thing. If you store your ribbons properly, they're more likely to last. You know, they're oil-based ink, so they're not going to dry out a whole lot unless they're in really hot weather, really dry environments. And the other thing is, you want to make sure that they're not stored in overly humid environments either, because they rot. But for the most part, if you store it nice, if you treat it well, those ribbons will last for decades.
Yeah, good point. The Typosphere has been lucky enough to have you sell a few ribbons lately in those tins. I know I've got a few.
Yeah, I am very glad that idea popped in my head. I think it's probably one of the finest ideas I've ever had, if I do say so myself.
Okay.
Ribbon tins, people like them, people collect them, and it's just a really great way to sell a ribbon. You know, it's safe, it's airtight, protects the ribbon, and it's a little bit of branding opportunity for me.
Well, you're right, and not everybody. A lot of people are under the impression that you need two spools, when you pop out the old spools, put in two new spools, but your tins specifically just have the one spool in them.
Traditionally, typewriters were only sold with one spool. You would buy the extra spool on a ribbon tin, and that would have the ribbon stock on it. You'd stick that in the empty spool cup and spool it onto one spool. You're familiar with all like the Corona 4s and the Corona 3s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, those ribbon spools are often stamped left and right. Yep. But the funny thing is, you only find one type of spool. It's generally, I want to say, the right-hand spool that you find is because you would buy the right-hand spool. The left-hand spool is on the machine. You would buy the right spool, spool it onto the left. And the idea was you would always keep one spool on the typewriter, and then you would just buy another one.
Right.
But, you know, over the years, people throw them both out, and then they just need to buy an extra spool. So we do have a shortage of one type of spool.
I bet you I've got 3 or 4 Coronas that have two spools that say, they both say right on them.
that's a problem. And people, you know, they don't pay attention to that a lot. It wasn't something that was advertised. There was no rule that was like, you only buy one typewriter spool, never throw out your spools. Because back then they were in great supply. They were very numerous.
Right.
And now we're coming to see that since they're not so numerous, you know, there's a lot of people who are trying to get customers and typewriter users to retain their metal spools, because that is very important. You know, you're not going to find these spools anywhere else. And sometimes the spool is very important to the actual function or the aesthetics of the machine.
Oh.
You know, for the Royal desktop machines and the Haldas, you got that little tab that triggers the automatic reverse. Nobody makes those anymore. You're not going to find them anywhere. With the Ericas, you got that really large spool that kind of fills in the front of the machine. And if you use a smaller spool, it just doesn't look as nice.
Well, you're right, and it's probably the number one question people ask me. Do you have this spool for this machine? Spools are definitely quite rare.
Yeah.
So hopefully...
You know, I don't know who said this to me, but it's something that I've carried with me for a long time. And it was the idea that back then, people didn't see typewriters as something that was beautiful like we do now. They saw them as something that was utilitarian. So everything that was on a typewriter existed for a specific purpose. Those spools were designed that way for that machine for a purpose. And that's something we really get away from nowadays. We tend to think of it as more of an aesthetic thing, but some of these spools are really necessary to the function of the machine, and we can't just be throwing them away.
Amen. Amen. I hope people are not throwing their spools away. Well, if they're empty, they're
called spools. Yeah, so if anybody's listening, don't throw away your spools.
Don't throw them away. They're important. Save them. Who knows? But your ribbon comes on universal. I've been calling them giveaway reels, you know, that. But yeah, that's a good idea. But you also have a dual spool package.
I was calling them giveaway spools myself until they raised the prices on them.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
I think that comes from, so I'm a locksmith during the day, and so we have giveaway key rings, and it probably comes from that idea of industry standard that this is something that ought be free, that, you know, but universal works, but there's really truly nothing that's universal in the world of industry. So it's
there's really nothing that's free either.
Yeah. Amen.
You know, I work really hard to keep my ribbons at an affordable cost and at a price point that is somewhat lower than my competitors. And I also want to make sure that these are high quality products.
You have dual spool ribbons you're selling these days too in that box.
Yes.
Good.
You know, some people just need them both.
Yeah, yeah. And well, I would think it's something like 40% of the machines that are still out there and alive can use the universal and or giveaway spools. So they
I'd say that's fair, maybe more like 60.
Oh, okay.
Universal ribbon spools were invented by the Underwood Company. Before they made typewriters, they made ribbon spools. So the whole idea of a 2-inch spool really came from them. A lot of companies use that 2-inch spool, but they made slight modifications to it, like a larger central post or something like that.
Right. Well, it really is, in my humble opinion, the most complicated circuit on a typewriter that can fail and cause issue. It'll just cause so much drag on the machine.
Yeah, there are some machines that certain type of plastic spools just won't work on because of injection mold seams or small tolerance differences.
Yep. Yep. Amen.
You can't beat the metal spools.
Oh, I agree. You seem to have a very good problem where you take a lot of great pictures of your machines.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Photography is probably my first, money pit.
Okay, there you go. Let's hear all about
it. Obsession? I don't know.
I'm always really impressed and take an example. So.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. Thank you. And a lot of people have said just very nice things about my work. I've always really kind of been an artist first and foremost. I love to create things. And photography was a nice, simple, easy way to do that consistently every time. So I really took a liking to that pretty early on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good on you. I worked as a photographer all through high school and a bit through college, but that was back when, you know, it was 35mm. Kodak was still in business. We did medium format. I never owned a Hasselblad, but I had a Mamiya, and you know, it wasn't a bad gig, but it was a lot of time in the dark room.
The upsetting thing now is that what a photograph that could take me an entire month to complete, from taking the photo to processing it to making a print, some kid can do on their iPhone in like 5 seconds.
Yeah, well said.
So the job opportunities for photographers nowadays are slim pickings, hence why I'm not a photographer right now. I mean, if I lived like 30 years ago, yeah, I would make a really good living with my technical skill.
That's fair. That's very fair. But boy, you make those machines look really good in all that you photograph. Good for you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. I think film and typewriters go together really well.
Let's talk about the future of typewriters, specifically you and typewriters. Where do you see the future of typewriters going, and where do you see yourself fitting into that?
I am not the most optimistic person in the world. I do believe that there is a place for typewriters permanently in the future, but I don't believe that it's going to remain as big of a gig as it is right now. I mean, I would hope that it does, because I don't intend on giving this up anytime soon. My end goal here is to actually open a physical typewriter shop and a workshop where I can, you know, have people come in, look at what I got. You know, I would like a physical brick and mortar location.
Right. Showroom and repair.
Yes. With the way that typewriters are going, I think that is perfectly viable for the next several years. But there's going to come a time, like all good things, it'll just fade away. There's still going to be people, of course, who are collecting and using, you know. These aren't machines that just vanish with time. They'll still be there, but the amount of people who are interested in it like they are now, I don't think that's going to be there.
I think sometimes it really has to do with the quality of the machines, right? There's really nothing too much else in our building of society that can last as long for what it is. And you and I both know, as we've gotten to be very intimate with machines, it's extremely well made, extremely fine metals.
Oh yeah, that is totally true. You know, the cost of a Remington QuietRider back in the day with inflation would be about $1,600. Now, if you look at the Royal Classic that's being made in 2019, where they're charging $250 for that, which at first glance, it seems like a pretty fair price, but you have to look at the manufacturing. Right. If you physically wanted to make a machine that was as good of a quality as a machine from the 60s, the cost of manufacturing would be so high that nobody would purchase it.
Right, right. I totally
So they're
agree
not
with
to
that.
Blame that they made a crappy machine. It's just nobody's going to shell out the money required to justify making a machine that's any good.
I think even if 1% of the population of the world decided they all wanted to buy typewriters, they would just buy one or two. Maybe they buy a standard and a portable, and they write with it. You know, they just want to write.
You only need one typewriter. That's it.
I don't know about all that. I need three just to sit down and write. You sit down and write. Your process is set so much where you can just use the one typewriter, huh?
You need three typewriters for each of your three hands?
Yeah. My feet, you think your feet are talented? You should see my feet. I need to shoot a video sometime. I've said it before, but I enjoy.
Of your feet? People pay good money for that.
I need to interview younger people more often. No, I like to have the outline typewriter on the left, a big standard in front of me that I'm actually writing on. And then one on the right that I'm typing up notes or other things.
Oh, well, you
on.
Know what I call that? It's called having disposable income.
Well, I rebuilt them all myself. I mean,
typewriters are single-purpose machines. They're built to do one thing and one thing only.
Well
so
said.
Technically, you don't need a whole lot of them.
No, you don't. But boy, I really like having three of them in front of me to write. So
yeah, it is nice. And I myself own about seven of them, but I only keep the machines that I use regularly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a user. I'm a typer. I fix machines for a lot of people, but I don't fix a whole lot of machines for myself. And if I find that there's a machine sitting around collecting dust, it gets passed on, even if that's a little bit hard for me.
The cobbler's son wears no shoes. I completely understand. You've gotten.
I just hate seeing them there. You know, they were built to type, and type they will.
Oh, I completely agree. Sometimes I really feel almost stressed with the few machines I have in storage that I'm waiting to rebuild to maybe sell in the future, or if I really like them, I'll keep them. But yeah.
I think it was really that mentality that helped jumpstart me. In within the community, you know, there's two factors to repairing typewriters. It's being a part of the typosphere, as I've come to know it's called, and there's being a part of the writer community that is actually using these machines.
Amen.
And I've admired for a long time a lot of the people in this group, you know, like Richard Polt and Joe Van Cleve and all these really great guys who were doing all this stuff with typewriters that I thought was really neat. And here I was at like 15, just some kid who had a couple of them and thought they were cool. But it was a couple of years ago when I fixed that Hammond Model 12 from like 1907, and I used it as a daily driver for months, that people were like, hey, you know, maybe he's onto something. Because I think that there's this mentality with a lot of these pre-1920s machines that people are afraid to touch them. You know, they don't want to break them. They don't want to do something wrong with them.
Right.
But in my mind, they're built to type, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. I really feel like that helped get me a bit of a foot in the door, so to say, and just, you know, kind of tell people that I'm serious about this. I'm not some, you know, hipster kid who's interested in a fad. You know, I believe in these machines. I think there's something to them, and, you know, I'm serious about what I'm doing.
Well, you bring up a very good point, and I've really seen the dividing line more and more as the years go by between people who really love the machines and people who view it as a choice tool to write with, right? So I've learned a lot of my customers who come to me just to buy a machine, a lot of them are writers, be it professional or amateur. They stare at a computer screen all day. They want to write when they get home, and they don't want to stare at another computer screen. So
yeah, I really appreciate the people who genuinely want to use these machines. You know, I feel like that's the future of them, you know.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. In regards to your involvement in the Toposphere, we're very fortunate to have you write articles every so often for Etc.
I've only done two, but I appreciate it. You know, the second one was kind of a joke. I didn't actually think anyone would go for it.
Oh, you had me rolling, my friend. I was laughing so freaking hard. I sat there and narrated it. I should read it on the show here. It is so good. But that was...
Well, I'm glad you liked it. I was kind of hoping that Lego would pick it up and that would be great. But, you know, one can dream.
Yeah, well, it was really good. If no one's checked it out, find it in Etc. magazine. But
I really do think that the Lego typewriter was a great thing for the community. Mm. You know, Legos are something that are geared towards a large audience, primarily a young audience. And sure. When you get typewriter exposed in that context, you know, that's great. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. Lucky us to have Lego put them out. And they seem to be holding their value. And I've told a few people that lately, that typewriters are like Legos. They're not going to go down in value. So,
yeah, that's the great thing. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to add value to typewriters.
Amen. There seems to only really be, switching subjects here, there seems to only be maybe a handful of younger people such as yourself that are into repairing typewriters, using typewriters. You're 21, 22?
Yeah, I'll be turning 22 in a couple of months.
All right. Good on you. I know I was very young when I got into amp and guitar repair. I think by the time I was 21, I was able to buy my house because I was doing so much repair in that respect. But do you see a lot more young people getting into it like yourself? Or
I'm hoping to see a lot more young people get into it. And I only really know of two. I remember when Jack Armstrong from Tampa Typewriter got into typewriters, and he was 14 at the time. He's a couple years younger than me, maybe 2 or 3 years. And he's just turned it into this incredibly impressive, explosive business. And yeah. I've really enjoyed seeing him create this thing out of ashes, really. Very impressed with the quality of work that he does. And then there's also Keith Furr up in Canada, who's absolutely amazing. And I want to say he's maybe 19 or 20, who just does fantastic work in typewriter restoration himself. And yeah, there's not a lot of young people into repairing typewriters or into typewriters in general. You know, there's Josh Damore up in New York, who's 21 as well. He collects tractors and he does a lot of typewriter work, not necessarily the restoration, but more kind of like wholesale, I guess.
Sure.
But being of a younger generation into something that is so old makes it really, really difficult because there's a lot of bias against you. You know, you get these clients who are maybe 70 or 80 years old who just don't think you're knowledgeable enough to handle these machines. And that makes it really difficult to get work done. You know, you want your customers to believe that you're capable of doing this and that you have a high regard for it. You have the knowledge and everything and the expertise. But, you know, again, there is a bias there that makes some things difficult sometimes.
This is why I love that younger generations are getting into it. You guys are happy to speak highly of each other because you're not next door. You're not competing for business. You know, you're happy to talk each other up, share a few things. I know you were kind enough to set up a nice group for typewriter mechanics that I'm in. And, you know, we swap questions back and forth. You know, there's not the realm of competition that the older people seem to have in the industry.
Really can't be. You know, this isn't an industry that anybody can hop in and do. You know, there's no resources on this. There's no textbooks. There's no college education classes on this stuff anymore. You really need to talk with the older generation of techs. You need to talk with the people who have been in this business. And you know, I'm not one for socializing, but I recognize the importance of making friends in the typewriter group. And that's really the only way that you can survive.
I think you do very well. It's not uncommon for me to open the social medias and see you helping someone out with a question back and forth 28 times. You're right there tapping your fingers away, doing your best to assist them. I think you need to pat yourself on the back.
Oh, well, thanks for that. Yeah, I'm always trying to lend a helping hand because I know what it was like when I was starting out.
Right. Well, good on you. And I'm very excited to see how you look and how you feel about it all in 20 years. And as far as I'm concerned, lucky us, the community of people who type, the community of people who work on typewriters, the typosphere, to have the likes of you and younger people. Good on you.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. And as the older generation retires and, you know, that some of them pass away, it is not going to be a whole lot of people left to take up the torch. So I'm really enjoying seeing more people my age come into this and have a desire to preserve these machines.
Well said. Where can people find you? I know you've got a great website. You're all over all the different social medias. You turned me on to TikTok. Now even I have a TikTok.
Yeah, I tried the TikTok thing for a bit. I heard it was a big platform. I assumed that most people on there weren't talking about typewriters. So I tried to make a stake in there, and it actually worked out quite well.
Yeah.
I'm primarily on Facebook and Instagram. Facebook mainly because that's where the typosphere operates. Facebook's a relatively old platform, and you know there's a lot of great people on there. But it's also kind of a difficult platform because there's also a lot of hate. And that's a little bit tricky sometimes.
Sure. You know, it's been around long enough.
You never quite know what's going to happen on Facebook.
Well said. Well said. You're right.
Yeah. So I promote on social media. I've got an Instagram account that I keep up with for the most part and, you know, try and direct traffic to my website.
Yeah. Typewriter_Chicago.
With another underscore. Yeah.
Oh, with another underscore. Typewriter_Chicago_. That's your Instagram.
Yeah, I wanted to make it Chicago Typewriter because, you know, it sounds better. But whenever you Google search Chicago Typewriter, you either get the K-drama or the submachine gun, and I would never come up.
Right. Well, that was a smart business move on your part. Where are you on Facebook?
Just me, Lucas Duell. You know, you'll find me popping up there somewhere.
Yeah, and then on TikTok, you had a really cool name.
Type Tech.
Okay, yeah. And then are you on Reddit as well, YouTube?
Yes, Reddit is an amazing platform. I love it. It's great. I did an AMA on there a few months ago and got a lot of people interested in typewriters and what I was doing. And that was probably the best engagement I've ever had through typewriters.
Okay, define AMA for us.
AMA stands for Ask Me Anything. You go on Reddit, prove your identity, and people just started flooding in questions. You know, I told them that I was a 21-year-old typewriter repair technician, and what I did was fix typewriters. And people had an extraordinary amount of questions, ranging from, you know, how did you get into this, to just questions about the use of typewriters in the 21st century in general. And I also had a lot of people who just stopped by to share some stories. And I heard this really great one from a man who said that his father used to work for Smith Corona in the typewriter factories. And back in the day, they would take all the spare parts from the assembly line that wouldn't go to machines and they'd throw them in boxes. So he asked his supervisor one day if he was able to assemble a working machine from all of those parts, if he could take it home. And his supervisor said yes, thinking that he wouldn't be able to do such a thing. And he did. He made a completely working typewriter from a box of parts and took it home and gifted it to his wife. And they still have that machine in their family. You know, I just thought that was the coolest thing. It reminded me of that song. What's it called? It's Johnny Cash song, stealing Cadillac parts.
Yeah, one piece at a time. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's a great story.
So that was excellent. I even got in contact with the owner of the 1,000,000th IBM Selectric ever made.
Okay.
Cool stuff happens.
Yeah. Are you rocking on IBM Selectrics? I don't touch them because there's so many other qualified printer repair guys in my area that can rock them. But are you playing with them?
Yeah. I cannot claim to be qualified to touch a Selectric, but I do. I touch them all the time. Well, not all the time, but yeah, they make enough sense to me where I can kind of piece together what's going on. And yeah. It's a challenge, that's for sure. And it's something that I've been taking this past year to learn. I just think they're incredible machines. They're 6-bit binary decoders that are completely mechanical, and it's just mechanical beauty to me. I love it.
Yeah, no, I agree. They definitely are great machines. I just, here in Southern California, there's a lot more cooler qualified people to play with them, so I always stick to the old mechanical jobbers. So
yeah, that is true.
So let's ask the burning question everyone, mostly I want answered. Do you think People like you and me with long hair, do you think the long hair makes us better typewriter technicians?
I think so. You can use that long hair and tie it to little parts so you don't lose them.
Oh, good idea. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like an armature that dangles off the top of your head.
We're full of crap. That's great. Lucas, thanks for being on Austin Typewriter Inc.
Thank you for having me. I really had a great time.
Yeah. Find us anywhere you can find your podcasts, and we'll look forward to all the good things you do in the future. Be good to have you back on again in the future and see what you're up to then.
I'm always game. Let me know.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thank you, too.
Thank you for listening to the Austin Typewriter Inc. podcast. For more information about our group, please find us online at austintypewriterinc.com, or you can also visit us on Facebook and Instagram. Join us next time for another episode of Austin Typewriter Inc. May your type slugs always be clean.